Obama in the house of a doctor who
spends 20% of each day supervising a staff, explaining insurance problems to patients, completing authorization forms, writing appeal letters, giving him less time to do what he became a doctor to do and actually care for his patients.
The president appeals to doctors to help reform health care. In a speech before the AMA, his biggest applause lines are about healing the medical profession itself. Strong medicine from the White House on The Takeaway.
All across America, this is The Takeaway from WNYC and PRI.
Good morning, everyone. This concludes the Thompson Twins portion of our show this morning, Tuesday, June 6th. I'm John Hockenberry, and across from me in the co-host seat for a change, Femi Oke.
Good morning. I got an upgrade.
Yes.
Woohoo.
For a day. Only a day.
So, coming up this hour, the foreclosure crisis is hitting people with prime mortgages and good credit. So what can the government do to address the problem? Also, seven sports are competed to be included in the 2016 Olympic Games. We hear from the man who's making the case for softball. And we kick off our week-long series on healthcare by checking in with two doctors who are using technology to cut costs. Those stories coming up, but first, headlines.
And in the headlines, Iran's Guardian Council says it's prepared to recount the disputed votes from last week's presidential election. The council is Iran's supreme legislative body. All three opposition candidates are contesting results that declared incumbent President Mahmoud Ahmadinejad the winner. Ahmadinejad denies those claims. Meanwhile, Iranian state media is reporting that seven people were killed during opposition protests in Tehran overnight. One Iranian citizen says the violence wasn't stopping opposition demonstrators from having their say.
People need to express that I've been holding this back for so many years. The genie is out of the bottle. I mean, you can't put it back.
Supporters of President Ahmadinejad and his main rival, Mir Hussein Mousavi, are both expected to hold further rallies in Tehran today. Femi?
Here in the United States, President Obama will host South Korean President Lee Myung-bak at the White House. They're expected to show a united front in light of North Korea's recent nuclear and missile tests. The U.S. is also expected to continue its commitment of military protection for South Korea in case of a North Korean attack. The meeting comes after the youngest son of Kim Jong-il reportedly visited China last week for secret meetings with the Chinese leader Hu Jintao. Now that's according to a Japanese newspaper. 26-year-old Kim Jong-un is next in line to take over the leadership of North Korea. Italy has agreed to take three detainees from Guantanamo Bay prison camp. That comes after a long meeting between Italian Premier Silvio Berlusconi and President Obama yesterday. And in a separate story, the European Union announced that it would allow European nations to receive Guantanamo Bay inmates cleared for release.
We're going to be talking about health care this morning. What do the doctors think?
This is Dr. Dave in New York City. My perfect insurance plan would include no insurance for anyone. We have a national health care system that provides health care for all Americans.
How would you make health care affordable? That's the question for you this morning. 877-8-MY-TAKE or mytake at thetakeaway.org.
The Takeaway is made possible by Liberty Mutual's Responsibility Project, encouraging discussion about what it means to do the right thing. ResponsibilityProject.com.
The Takeaway is supported by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting and by the John S. and James L. Knight Foundation, advancing journalistic excellence in the digital age. More information about the Foundation's digital initiatives at knightfoundation.org.
You're listening to The Takeaway.
Good morning, everyone. I'm John Hockenberry here with Femi Oke. We've been talking about this at least since yesterday, but it's not a theme we invented. Listen to Barack Obama speaking before the American Medical Association yesterday.
Make no mistake, the cost of our health care is a threat to our economy. It's an escalating burden on our families and businesses. It's a ticking time bomb for the federal budget, and it is unsustainable for the United States of America.
If the federal budget and the U.S. economy are a ticking time bomb, they have a number of fuses. The tightrope we are walking is no more in evidence than noting this relationship between the healthcare system and the cost of healthcare and people's budgets and their own sense of being on the edge. The foreclosure crisis is not going away, and medical bankruptcies are one reason why foreclosures are rising. According to the latest housing data, more homeowners than ever are going into default, and housing analysts are saying that the latest wave is heightened because of rising unemployment, health care costs, tipping people into bankruptcy. These are people who once had good credit and who had prime mortgages, not exotic, strange mortgages. No, no, this is the center of the middle class that is now being brought into this wave of foreclosures. Here to talk about it and what it means for the economy, especially as we're getting signs that maybe the worst of the recession is over, is Anya Kamenetz, staff writer for Fast Company magazine and author of Generation Debt. She joins us in the studio. Anya, thanks for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
So this is a disturbing trend as we are seeing certain bottoms in market statistics and maybe the unemployment numbers. We're also seeing a wave of employment-related foreclosures, healthcare-related foreclosures hitting the market. What are the implications? And give us a sense of the raw numbers here.
Sure. Well, I mean, so unemployment is pretty much twice what it was last year. It's 9.4%. We've had double-digit declines in the price of housing as well. And so people, the indication is that the impact on the middle class of these waves of unemployment, the waves of layoffs, it's just beginning to be felt. It really is. We're not at the end of it. We're at the beginning.
So at the end of last year, people like Hank Paulson in the outgoing Bush administration were saying that we're looking for the bottom in the so-called housing correction. You know, it seemed to me he was saying that at some point the subprime mortgages were going to correct and that would be the impact on prices. You're saying, no, there's actually a second wave here.
Well, you know, that might be true from the bank's point of view, but we have to remember that in the middle class in America, household income has been stagnant for almost 20 years. So, you know, the idea that just because, you know, the banks are in a better shape and they know what the value of what their mortgages are, that doesn't mean that for middle class people that they're not in danger of losing more of their net worth than they already have.
Give me a sense of a profile of a family that's solidly in this class of sort of second wave foreclosures.
Well, I guess, you know, the LA Times has been carrying stories, for example, of police officers that are going into foreclosure. You've got teachers going into foreclosure, people who maybe their student loans, a lot of the forgiveness programs have been canceled. And so, you know, all of a sudden their bills don't add up anymore.
Are any of the programs that the federal government either on an emergency basis brought into being money for people who are in trouble, moratoriums on foreclosures for individuals who are on the edge, do any of these help the middle class group that you're talking about here?
Well, just to get a sense of the numbers here, you know, the Center for Responsible Lending is forecasting 2.4 million delinquencies in 2009. Obama's mortgage plan so far has helped about 100,000 people.
That's a tiny percentage, really.
It really is a tiny percentage because, you know,
it's less than 5%.
Exactly. There's no impetus on the banks to actually make a deal with these people. I mean, they're encouraged to.
But why not? See, that's what I don't understand. Mm-hmm. If somebody forecloses, they have to report that as a loss.
Right.
If they can keep that person on the books, even paying a reduced payment, don't they get to claim that as an asset? And doesn't that help their balance sheet?
Well, I think you're right. I mean, the math does work out that it is almost in all cases, it's cheaper to restructure the loan. It's better for the homeowner and it's better for the bank. But in order to restructure and write down that loan, they are going to have to take a one-time loss. And the banks have been so protective of their balance sheets because we've been hearing all this about bad banks and banks getting bailouts. And so they have been very leery of actually taking that step. Their inclination is to try to keep the loan on the books as long as possible, ride this out.
So why does it make it difficult? And we've heard stories of people who actually have trouble finding the person at the bank who can actually listen to the reason that you're talking about here. Look, I don't want to default. I've got good credit. We can work this out. It's actually hard to find that person that you can actually negotiate with.
Well, you know, that goes back to the nucleus of this whole problem, right, is that these loans were repackaged and resold. They were, you know, they're serviced by servicers. They're sold as securities. The person that you got your mortgage from is not the same person who owns it now. And so there's really no one to sit down with.
And there's no one to sit down with. And so and your loan could be held by someone in Taiwan at this point, right?
Absolutely. And, you know, the more it's sliced and diced, the less there's that sense of personal responsibility of maybe a community bank where they would say, well, this is about property values in my neighborhood. Because let's not forget, foreclosures don't just affect the homeowner. They affect your neighbors. They affect property values for entire cities.
What can a family do if they realize that they're headed down a road that might lead to foreclosure and take preemptive steps to prevent this sort of thing from happening?
Well, you know, there's really no easy answer, and I think that, you know, we need to recognize that it's a very, very painful decision. It's an emotional decision for a lot of families. But foreclosure itself, you know, you can restructure your credit as soon as 24 months after foreclosure. You can get new credit. You can get a new home as soon as 5 years later. So it doesn't have to be the end of the world. The alternatives to foreclosure, before you actually have to sign that paper, you can possibly get rid of your house in a short sale, and that means that you have a third-party buyer who's willing to take it off your hands for less than what's owed on the mortgage. In some situations, you may be able to sign the deed over to the bank, accept a deed in lieu of foreclosure. And then there is also an outside possibility of assumption, and that is when maybe a friend or relative, you sign the deed over to them, they accept the payments.
Anya, are you seeing a difference in the way that mortgages are now actually given out to first-time homebuyers, second-time homebuyers now?
Well, we're seeing a tightening of credit standards all across the board. I mean, people are having – there are much higher standards for the credit scores that people have to have. They do have to show employment records. They do have to show, you know, that they do have a steady source of income as well. And that is another problem as well because, you know, in order to be even eligible for the types of restructuring and refinancing that is included in Obama's plan, you have to be able to show a steady source of income. If you are unemployed, you may not be eligible for that deal.
So I guess we were talking about the subprime mortgage, and we were talking about that, you know, 6 months ago.
Mm-hmm.
The price issues, the fact that these foreclosures would have an impact on prices in communities, and all of a sudden you see a crash of home prices, that was affecting places that had a proliferation of subprime mortgages, places like Las Vegas, places like South Florida, places right. like California communities. In this instance, this second wave of foreclosures is distributed geographically in a very different way. Can you explain?
Absolutely. So, right. So the foreclosures that we're seeing now are in markets that did not see that huge price inflation, that price bubble. It's really happening in middle-class communities all across the country.
So Detroit, Ohio, places like that, the middle part of the country. The Midwest is definitely affected by these.
Absolutely.
Let's look at some of the raw statistics. 5.4 million of the country's 45 million home loans are delinquent or in some stage of the foreclosure process in the mm-hmm. first 3 months of this year. Now, you go to the financial channels and all of these kind of raving sort of telethon economists slash journalists say, well, that means most of the mortgages are actually not delinquent. Most of the payments are actually not in foreclosure. Look at this tiny minority. How much of an impact does that 5.4 million have on things like price and the ripple effect in the economy that you alluded to a little while ago?
Well, I mean, I think it's going to have a huge ripple effect. I think, you know, every time a house is in foreclosure, it can reduce your neighbor's property values. It can depress the market in that area. And so I think that the impact is going to be very long term. Not to mention, you know, this is an impact on families and communities. These are people that are going to have trouble paying other bills. They're going to have trouble, again, with health expenses. And, you know, it really is something that it's devastating to communities.
It causes credit to tighten, which restricts business activity. Mm-hmm. It reduces the likelihood that new homes will be built, which reduces business activity. And, of course, let's come back to the last issue of health care. You know, we asked at the top of the program, how would you make health care more affordable? First of all, is health care a big driver of these bankruptcies? And since we're asking everyone the question of making health care affordable, I'm wondering if you have a plan.
Sure. So, well, do I have a plan? I don't know. But, you know, Elizabeth Warren, about 10 years ago in the two-income trap, showed that medical costs even then were the leading cause of bankruptcy. And that has only continued, you know, the shift of cost onto the individual. For me, I would really like to see a plan that encourages spending on preventative medicine because I know for me and my friends, you know, we're in that stage of life where we may not be going to the doctor regularly, but as much as we can be encouraged to, you know, spend on public health, that is, I think, going to reduce costs overall.
And the president was saying yesterday in his speech before the American Medical Association that preventive health actually produces jobs. If you create a preventive health system, it actually adds jobs to the system, doesn't subtract. Anya Kamenetz, staff writer for Fast Company magazine, author of Generation Debt, thanks for discussing the second wave of foreclosures in the U.S. economy.
Thanks for having me.
You can email us at mytake@thetakeaway.org or call us toll-free at 877-8-MYTAKE.
869-8253.
I'm David Remnick, host of the New Yorker Radio Hour. There's nothing like finding a story you can really sink into that lets you tune out the noise and focus on what matters. In print or here on the podcast, The New Yorker brings you thoughtfulness and depth and even humor that you can't find anywhere else. So please join me every week for The New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.